check it out now.
Ladies and gentlemen, this series that we do on the podcast side, which we are repurposing for radio here today in a special radio slash podcast jam. I don't know what the word was that I was looking for there. A medley. This is longer. This is longer live. This has been going on longer than the Megapod has, is what I'm trying to get at. It's our Q1, Q2, and Q3 derivatives MLB series that I have done with this gentleman from the beginning of time. And by the beginning of time, I mean when podcasts first started. Mark Borchert, base winner, joins us now to continue the festivities. So if we did this every year for like 15, 16 years, that must mean, and we never do Q4 because that's the end of the year, but that must mean we've done at least, just the quick math, at least 45 of these at this point.
Yeah, I think we started maybe in 2008. Possibly.
Oh, wow. Even more.
I remember doing some World Cup with you back what before in 2010. I remember doing some World Cup with you. So it actually goes back that far at least. So I would say 2008 would be it. So almost 20 years. And it's been fun. It's been so fun, Gil, working with you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk baseball every day.
Come on. We love you.
Once a week with you, actually.
That's
you don't let me get on every day.
Well, I would love to have you on every day. Is this you making a plea for every day? I would love to have you on every day. Okay, so for those who don't know, what we're doing here is we're just going through, by the way, this Q2. It's about the roundabout, the halfway point of the season here. Some teams have crossed it. Some teams are about to. And essentially, we want to look at baseball betting stats. Some are going to be just a narrative of what has happened in the first half of the season and may not be predictive moving forward. Others, though, you may find very predictive. Let's start with the broader ones, and we'll sort of narrow it down to the more proprietary things like first five betting numbers and first inning betting numbers, because we want to try to cover as many markets as we can. First, broadly, Mark, because your numbers will differ a little bit. I'm going to look at the covers.com numbers for these. The most profitable team in baseball, if you went through the bizarro exercise of just betting this team every single game to win a unit, if they're a favorite, risking a unit if they're a dog. If you did this every game, and by the way, if you're doing it every game, you're doing this wrong, but just for the purposes of this exercise, the most profitable team in baseball is?
The Milwaukee Brewers is what I have.
Covers has it as the Washington Nationals. They got it Nationals. Yeah, White Sox, Brewers, in that order.
It's really close. So, first of all, shout out to Carl Sack for Killer Sports. See, this tool is really good, and this one I use to get this kind of information. So, I would highly recommend it. But he's got the Brewers with a 10.38. If you bet 100 a game, you'd be up 1,038, and then the Nationals really close, 1,022. So, one of those teams for me, Gil, is a team that I've backed a lot with the Brewers, and one of the teams that I've lost a lot of money on the Nationals.
Yeah. By the way, for those who are wondering, how can those two things be different? In the Killer Sports case, as you said, I think in the favorite, they're risking a dollar, where I think in this one, they're risking more than a dollar to win a dollar. So there's going to be a little bit of a math discrepancy. But in whatever order, it's the Nationals and White Sox and the Brewers up on top of that list. Who would have had the Nats and the White Sox in that upper echelon when the season first began? And it should be pointed out as well that this bizarro exercise of just, I'm going to bet this team every single game of the year, right? Which no one does, but let's just say they did. Only, 11 teams are profitable. That's it. That's the list. The other 19, with the exception of the Dodgers, who would like have you down a dollar or something, but the other 18 are all in the red. The biggest hemorrhaging of money, if you did this bizarro exercise, bet them every single game, either favorite or dog, is
the Mets.
The New York Mets. God. They just edge out the Red Sox and the Tigers. And that makes sense. Again, for those who are wondering, okay, why would that be? The Mets were considered to be a really good team preseason, as were the Red Sox by many, as were the Tigers by many. So they lost a lot as favorites, right? They continue in the case of the Mets to lose as favorites. They lost a couple games yesterday to the Cubbies. But, you know, as favorites by and large many times, but now as dogs more often, still, those are the three biggest hemorrhaging teams in all of baseball. Do you think in both the good and the bad that those things persist in the second half of the season?
I don't think the White Sox are going to be able to do it, Gil. And I don't think the Nationals are either. I think that the pitching on both ends. And then I don't have it seems like I'm playing against the White Sox every day because I don't really have their components, any of them very good. So I think that that's going to probably the White Sox will fade according to the numbers that I use. And then I think that the Nationals, you know, great hitting, really good hitting, surprisingly good hitting. But the pitching is just awful, especially the bullpen, Gil.
By the way, with the Nationals and the White Sox, the splits are actually pretty amazingly stark. So with the Nationals, if you were just betting them at home every game, you'd be down almost 7 units. On the road, you'd be up 17, which by far is the best road team betting-wise in all of baseball. 24-16, by the way, in your standings on the road. The White Sox are the opposite, right? White Sox would have you up 15.3 units to the positive at home. You'd be losing money on them 5.5 units on the road. So big, stark splits on those two teams in terms of their success, whereas with the bottom teams, well, they just suck either way, right? Run line, the de facto power ranking. Mark, how many times have we said that? Of all of these baseball teams in terms of betting, your number one run line team, again, for those new to this, favorites, giving a run and a half, dogs, getting a run and a half. So even if you lose by one, you would get a win. The most profitable run line team in all of baseball is?
The Braves, America's team.
Covers has the Rays a little more profitable than the Braves. Braves would be second. Where do you have the Rays? Second?
It goes Braves, Brewers, Nationals, Rays.
Oh, that is
on the run line.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know what's interesting about the run line? I just want to get this in. We can get back to it. But the away favorites, they're actually performing better than the money line. And you never see that because you got to pay a little bit more juice on the run line. So it's interesting. It's an interesting trend this year. And it's really kind of steered me to play more run lines. So I'm intrigued by what's going on.
I am not a huge run line bettor. However, there are opportunities like every few weeks, right? You know what? The situation just makes sense. How often are the two of you guys betting run lines in baseball?
I am not very often.
Dustin, it's a great question. It used to be less than 5% of all the plays I gave out. And I would say that it's approaching maybe 30%.
Wow.
And I think there's something, I think there's something there. I think it's the way that the teams are shaping their bullpens up. I'll see teams, you know, they're only down by two runs. They're bringing in their underbelly. The underbelly comes in, they're only down by two. So I think that there's actually some strategy or some, I mean, maybe teams are looking forward. They're like, well, you know, our win probability on this game is this. And so they put in a lousy reliever. And I'm, cause they used to like, it used to be pretty standard how they, people would use a relief, and I'm just amazed sometimes when the game's still close, they'll bring in, you know, the Chuck Roast of the bullpens.
By the way, the worst run line teams Covers has is the Giants, followed by the Mets and the Seattle Mariners, interestingly, in that as well. So again, when you are favored, it doesn't get home. You don't win games big. When you're a dog, you ain't keeping them close either. But the Giants are the worst. You have the Giants as the worst
on the run line.
Yeah.
Let's see where that goes. It's Giants. It's Giants, Phillies, Mets. Yep.
Giants, Phillies, Mets. Okay. We'll get into umpires next. But more importantly, we'll get into first fives and first innings as well, in case you bet those markets. Mark Borchardt, base winner. At base winner on Twitter, basewinner.com is where you can find him as well. Gil Alexander, Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, you've hit the big time. You're on the Beating the Book podcast. Never gets bigger than this.
That's what I hear.
That's huge.
That's what I hear.
Mark Borchardt joining us for the Q2 Baseball Derivative Show for baseball bettors. Just want to go through these real quick. One, this is just also weird, Mark, but we always talk about this whenever we do this, is we're just talking about randomly backing teams, bizarro exercise every single game, whether they're a favorite or a dog. No one ever does that, but just for purposes of seeing how teams have been killing or really enriching bettors. We do it with starting pitchers, too. This is even more ridiculous, right? But the most profitable starting pitchers in baseball per Covers, shout out to the people at covers.com. And this, what kills me about this is the most bizarre list I've ever seen, I think, in the time that we've been doing this. Tomoyuki Sugano of the Colorado Rockies. If you had backed him every single game that he has started this year, the Rockies are 10-5, you'd be up over 10 units. So he's one of them at the at the top here. Next would be Foster Griffin. Foster Griffin of the Nationals. Foster Griffin would have you up 10 units as well, because the Nats are 12-4 in games that he started. And then, not to be outdone, it's Joey Cantillo of the Cleveland Guardians. You'd be up not quite as much as those guys, but you have 9 units if you backed him. By the way, if you go 4-5-2, it's Brandon Young of the Orioles. It's Davis Martin of the White Sox. Have we ever seen a more rando 5 than those guys?
It's absolutely bizarre, Gil, and I know where you're going next to the worst ones, but that just goes to show you how easy baseball betting is. Yeah, just bet against this Cigano guy. All his advanced numbers are just awful, and so he's the most profitable pitcher in the game. That is so wild, Gil.
Yeah, and by the way, there's nothing to that, right? Like, there's that is narrative. That's not really predictive, correct?
I don't know. I mean, maybe the guy can do a lot with a little. I don't know. Like, I just know on Sugano's case, it's like, it seems like I'm betting against him all the time
because
his advanced numbers are terrible.
Yeah.
So yeah. It shows you, like, and if you look back at that, like, match, it looks like, well, you know, you have this guy versus this guy and these are what the numbers are. And so I think, you know, overall, if you have a, you know, this set of numbers versus this set of numbers, and you look at 200 games, it'll go to what the probability is. But so this is very, in a year, what did Vin say? In a year where the improbable has happened, the impossible has happened. And I would put that in that case right there.
That was Kirk Gibson in 1988 in the World Series.
What a great call. Yeah, that was one of the best calls of all time.
So what I'm hearing, guys, it's so easy. Bet on bad teams because they're plus prices, but only bet on them when it's the right situational matchup.
Yeah, that's again, we'll have more predictive things coming up, but that one certainly is. As far as the worst, by the way, again, bizarro exercise. You just back these guys when they've been on the hill. Chris Paddock of the Cincinnati Reds. Is this right? The Reds are 0-9 when he's been on the hill this year. Is that correct? Down 9 units, meaning they were a dog every time he was on the hill. Is that right?
That's what I got too, Gil. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. Can I interest you in some Simeon Woods Richardson of the Cubs? Does that interest you at all? Of the Blue Jays. Blue Jays are 1-9. When he's been on the hill, he'd have cost you 7.5 units. Jack Flaherty of the Tigers. Tigers 4-11 when he started. If you bet him bizarro every time, either as a favorite or dog, all of them, you'd be down 7.5 units. Those are the worst in terms of the blind backing guys. So there you go. Chris Paddock can't get any.
What do you have for Skeens? Skeens on this one's the worst.
Yes,
in baseball.
Skeens is a top 10. He's the 11th worst. You'd be down 6.2 units according to this. Pirates 6-10. The result of the game, not his record, but the Pirates finished 6-10 straight up in games that Skeens has started. So he's bad. He's just not the worst of the group. So Skeens is killing betters though this year. That's been one of the big stories, of course, in Major League Baseball. Umpires, what I love about having you on, I say this every time, Mark, is that I will have this year's stats. This is great for totals bettors. Which umpires skew over? Which umpires skew under in terms of their results? But you have historical numbers on this, so we won't even rely on this season's, but you will let us know which of these corroborates with a more robust database of their performance. The most reliable over umpires thus far this season. Andy Fletcher, 5 games out of 5 when he's been calling balls and strikes, have gone over. Emil Jimenez, 5 out of 5 to the over. Doug Eddings, our boy, 6 of 7 to the over. Lance Barrett, 6 of 7 to the over. How long? These guys have been umpiring for as long as we've been doing this. Alfonso Marquez, 6 of 7 to the over. Adam Beck, 6 of 7 to the over. Eric Backes, 6 of 7 to the over. And then 5 of 6 to the over. Derek Thomas, Steven Jashinski, Willie Traynor. Any of those corroborate with your longer length stats on being reliably over umps?
Derek Thomas, he was a good linebacker for the Chiefs, wasn't he?
He was.
You've got Andy Fletcher and Eric Backes in the top 15, I would say. Yeah, probably 11 and 13, respectively.
Talking about all-time stats that you have?
You know, I actually made this a little bit more recent because I wanted to kind of capture the, but it goes back, I think it goes back to mid season 2024.
Okay.
And Fletcher and Backus, if all those guys would be the guys who I would look at for overs.
Okay. Where do you go now? Cause I used to say StatFox was the place you could go to find umpire assignments. Where do you go? And you have a hack for this anyway, if you can just figure out who was being the umpire, who was the home plate umpire on a given first game of a series.
Yeah, it's always going to, I don't even bother with the first game of the series because it's just too time consuming to manually do it. But once the first game gets played, then I just run a program and it plugs it gets whoever the first base umpire is, he moves to home plate the next day. So, that's an easy way to do it. You know, that's one of the things, Gil, I think that I can just automate pretty easily on my site. So that gives me a to-do list to put on my site because I think it's important. You know, I kind of put it on hold, Gil. I said this the other day, the other podcast, because I thought, well, you know what, the ABS is going to kind of even this out and it's not going to be as big of a deal. And I think it's still a big deal. I think you still got to do it. So,
okay. Well, let's do that at basewinner.com so everybody can come to basewinner.com for umpire assignments if you can automate that. So Backus and who was the other guy?
Backus and Fletcher were the over guys.
So in other words, if you have an instinct to bet an under on Backus and Fletcher home plate umpired games where they're calling balls and strikes, maybe you should pause before betting that under because they tend to, over time, These tend to go over. And what does that mean? Does that mean that their strike zone is the size of a thimble? You know, that their strike zone is particularly small? Maybe. The opposite of that, the most reliably under umpires, where perhaps their strike zone... hold on, I did the other way around, right? No, that's correct. Where the strike zone is massive for these reliably under umpires. I'll give you the stats from this year. Brock Ballew, 4 out of 4 to the under. I don't think we ever said that name before. John Libka, 5 out of 5 to the under when he's called balls and strikes. Some more 4 out of 4s, DJ Rayburn, Alan Porter, Marvin Hudson. Oh, wait, is Marvin Hudson more than 4 out of 4? I have two numbers for Hudson. I have 4 out of 4 and 8 out of 8. I'm not sure which one that is, but let's put it this way. Every time he's calling balls and strikes, it goes under. And then 5 out of 6, pardon me, Jacob Metz, Clint Vondrak, Ron Culpa, Manny Gonzalez, 5 out of 6 of theirs to the under. Oh, by the way, some 7 out of 9s, Charlie Ramos as well. All those guys. Edwin Moscoso, also 6 out of 8 to the under. Any of those guys track longer time frame to the under?
Libkep, he's 7% from a pitcher standpoint, run suppression. And if you think about it, if some of these guys, it ranges, doesn't range 20%, but some of it's 10%. So if you got a total of 9 and the guy's got like an over tendency, well, that's going to be 0.9 runs. And so I think that you got to probably put it in your handicap, but that's the one guy, John Libka was from a year and a half to almost 2 years of data. That's the guy who would stand out.
Yeah. So unlike some of the other things we've discussed before, this truly is predictive with some of these guys. You can really rely on them to call balls and strikes the same way. And again, maybe it takes you off bets. Maybe it sort of corroborates your leans on stuff with totals if you happen to be a totals better. We'll come back. Last things, and these are the most interesting. First 5 inning betting stats, how those differ with full games. First inning pitchers, how they perform, good and bad. Remember, this was the first 5 exercise that uncovered that whole White Sox thing last year where they were great in the first 5 and sucky for the full game. Gil Alexander, Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with Mark Borchardt for one more segment. Base Winner at BaseWinner, basewinner.com. This is where it gets funky. This is the part I love, which is, again, we all see the baseball standings. We all kind of, you know, most people are betting full games. But there's first 5 betting, which... You know, I don't know, when we first started this, man, this is the thing, Mark, is like everybody takes everything for granted that this existed from the beginning of time. When we did this, like the first 5 years we did this, we were like the only people betting this kind of thing, and it wasn't widely available, and you couldn't find stats on first 5, and now everybody takes it for granted that it's existed since, you know, the dawn of time. So let's talk about first 5s. Now, you don't have access to these. I want to shout out Odds Shark, They're the ones compiling these now. And that's the other thing through the years. Sometimes it's been OddShark. Sometimes I did it manually. Sometimes there was, I don't know, some other website that I used to use. But this is courtesy of OddShark. The number one most profitable first five team in all of baseball is, guess.
I'm going to guess the Brewers, Gil.
The Brewers are fifth.
Okay, well, that's fifth. Close.
The same team that was cited as a full game stalwart, the Washington Nationals, are the most profitable first five team in all of baseball thus far this year. And I mean by far, like doubling up the number two team. The Washington Nationals first five this year are 44, 26, and 10. By the way, I think that's one game shy, but they are still, they're up 20 units, up 20 units in first five betting. Now, is that sustainable in your opinion?
I don't think so. If you look at their offense, you certainly would say, well, yeah, they're seventh in weighted runs created plus first five innings, but they're 20th in xFIP first five innings. And I think that's about where they are, maybe even a little bit worse. You kind of look at their collection of characters, and with the exception of the guy who's going today, Cavalli, who I like, the rest of those guys are subpar, if you will, Gil.
I will. This is the thing about first five, because obviously it's not the full game. It's condensed, right? And it doesn't always happen this way. But what we're seeing at the top here is three teams that are not going to knock your socks off in the standings. But first five, they've been amazing. So the Nationals by far have been the most profitable. Number two is the Guardians, who would have gotten you half of that, 10 plus units of the positive. They just took over second place last night from the Angels, who now go to third. So it's Nationals by far, Guardians second, Angels three, and then it's the Cardinals and Brewers four and five. Then it gets a little more, you know, consistent with standings. But man, those three teams at the top, Nats, Guardians, Angels, who would you
know, there's a stat, Gil. I'm sorry to jump in, but I have to get this out, because the Angels, if you look at weighted runs created plus, they are on the road second in baseball, and at home they are last in baseball. It's the wildest stat I've ever seen, because it goes Dodgers 125 weighted runs created plus, and then Angels 114, and then the Angels at home are 82 weighted runs created plus. I don't think I've ever seen that.
And by the way, we were talking about this for the full game. So there's only 10 teams. Remember, the straddle is bigger on first five. Only 10 teams are profitable. If we did this bizarro exercise, which is what we're talking about, you bet them every single game, first five. Remember, there are pushes in first fives as well. But these, you know, a lot of these teams are going to be dogs. It's only the Nats by far, again, Angels, Guardians, Cardinals, Brewers, and the only other five profitable teams, first five, Twins, Athletics, Reds, Dodgers, and Rays. So the Dodgers, even while being massively favored first five, still would have eked you out a little bit of profit. The worst first five teams, and by worst I mean that would have hemorrhaged money thus far for you as a bettor, guess the single worst.
Maybe Cincinnati.
Cincinnati is not even in the top 10 worst, as a matter of fact. The worst.
Wow. Okay.
Red Sox worst would have cost you 16 units. Orioles.
That was my second guess.
Okay, yep. Was it? Oh, sorry. No. Sorry.
No. It would have been, but.
I'm sorry. I blew it for you. Orioles second worst. Phillies third worst, which has got to be the most surprising of all. But again, they're probably favored hugely in a lot of those first fives, and maybe didn't come through first five-wise. We see it here recently, Phillies winning games late. Astros fourth worst, Giants, and Blue Jays fifth and sixth worst. So, Mets, by the way, not to be outdone, seventh worst. But it's the startling distance between the Nationals' profitability first five and any other team is really the story of first five betting this year. Any of that bottom group you think sustainably bad?
I think Boston on the other side. I think Boston's, you know, they're gonna get better. Their xFIP is in the top 10, and I don't know. I think that's probably the only one that I would say is an outlier, yeah. if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just say this about the Nats too. I'm acting like they're a terrible baseball team. They're 41-40 at the bend.
Well, we keep looking for it to turn to go the other direction. I mean, I'm on their win total under. That is obviously a dead bet, but they're fun. They're young. What do young players do? They actually get better.
if all goes right, they actually get better. All right, first innings, last one here. For those who bet first innings, a lot of people like Yurfies and Nerfies. That's what they call them now. Jason Weingarten and I were betting these for years and years and years before we weren't. What we'll do here is we'll do it based on opponents on base percentage in the first inning alone. Let's get granular here. Opponents on base average in the first inning alone. And I'll do a minimum plate appearances of 50. Let's set it at 50. The worst starting pitcher in baseball in first innings this year, minimum plate appearances faced 50. Mark is who? What's your guess?
I've got Brian Bayo right there at the minimum 50.
Yes.
OBP 520.
That's exactly what I have. Brian Bayo 520, who, by the way, plays for the Red Sox. Sorry, I didn't mean to pick on the Red Sox here at the end. Worst pitcher in baseball in first inning. So just keep that little tidbit in mind, by the way, and I think these will probably track with yours. Second worst, Luis Severino of the Athletics, 459 opposing on base. Tyler Molly of the Giants, 426. Adrian Hauser of the Giants, 425 against. And Jake Irvin of the Nationals, he would be the fifth worst. Those track with yours?
Those are those are if you're looking at the TBF of 50 as being the minimum.
That's right.
That's right.
Oh, God. Okay. Now, what's probably even more interesting is the best, because the best usually tracks with big name pitchers. And here it kind of does as well. Who do you have as the single best first inning pitcher in all of baseball?
I've got Parker Messick for the Guardians.
That's who I got. Parker Messick of the Guardians. The best first inning. We're just talking about that one frame. Parker Messick, the best first inning pitcher in all of baseball, opposing on base percentage of 172. And then it really is a who's who, right? Because I got Mizorowski at 179, Schlittler at 179, perhaps your presumptive Cy Young winners right there who come out of the gate strong. Trevor Rogers of the Birds, 180. Michael King of the Padres, 182. And then poor Cubs, Edward Cabrera, who is now hurt again. Do you see that where he did the splits at first base covering the bag yesterday? 192 on base against. He's the sixth best in the first inning, but he's going, you know, to the IL, it looks like. So
the one thing I did want to say, because he just misses the threshold on TBF, Gil.
Yeah.
45 total batters faced. I want to throw this in for Paul Spohr. Keeter Montero, 0.044 OBP.
Oh, wow.
And you can say that he, you know, Keeter's not keating around in that first inning, Gil.
Mark Borchardt, everybody. That's why he gets the big bucks. Comments like that. So if I had to reduce the minimum plate appearances, in other words, from 50, which was my parameter, just sort of arbitrary, to 45, he shows up as the greatest
of
them all.
Yeah, and I thought that guy was, I was like, really? So, you know, you sometimes, you know, you see these outliers and you go, well, okay, well, I didn't know.
Yeah, so unlike that ridiculous list of starting pitchers backed have been the most profitable if you had just backed this pitcher every time they took the hill, where it was just like, who are these people for most casual baseballers? This makes complete sense, where it's the Miz, Schlittler, right? That those two guys right at the top. I'm trying to see, like, if I go down where other big names are also. Kyle Harrison is a top 15.
Logan Webb's up there, too.
Chase Burns. All those guys. Mark, always interesting, always appreciate it. Thank you so much. At BaseWinner, BaseWinner.com. Appreciate you doing it on the radio side this time as opposed to the podcast side, but we'll put it on the podcast feed. Thank you, man.
Gil, it's always my pleasure. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Mark Borchardt, everybody. By the way, you can scan the QR code there for the Beating the Book podcast.